It's time to catch the beat for Market Street on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Your community radio station is in the heart of the action in downtown Champaign, and Catch the Beat brings highlights of local news, arts, culture, and issues to pay attention to. Catch the Beat is brought to you in part by the listeners of WEFT and Jane Addams Bookshop in downtown Champaign. For more than 40 years, Jane Addams Bookshop has been a destination for readers and book lovers of all ages. Featuring three floors of gently used books, greeting cards, journals, and more. Jane Addams Bookshop is at 208 North Neal in downtown Champaign, online at Jane Addams, that's A-D-D-A-M-S, books.com. As always on WEFT, the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Inc., Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates. I'm your host, Cope Cumston. I'm pleased to welcome to Catch the Beat artist and teacher John Odom. John, this week you are poised between these two roles. You've just closed your first solo show at the Crow Gallery, which was titled Regeneration. And at this very moment, you are sitting in your classroom at Carrie Busey Elementary School, preparing to begin a year of teaching. And you have been richly recognized in both roles. You were named the signature artist for the Boneyard Arts Festival in 2025, and you have a long, distinguished career as an artist in town. And you've been honored as Illinois Elementary Art Educator of the Year. So, as you catch your breath in this moment of transition, how do you experience the shift between focusing on your personal art practice and your role as a teacher? And do you have particular plans for your students this year?
Well, first of all, thank you, Cope, for having me on your program. And wow, I've spent my whole life as an artist making things. And, you know, some of my fondest memories are that of as a kid, just creating things, not just drawing and painting, but building and making and having parents that were very accommodating to that. And so for me as an art teacher, I feel it's just kind of an extension of that I've always enjoyed. So I'm helping kids discover that same thing, you know, that I love and enjoy. Early on, when I first finished undergrad at University of Illinois, I was ready to search for a high school or a junior high position. And I took a job teaching elementary art so I wouldn't be subbing for a year. And within, you know, a short amount of time, I realized the enthusiasm of elementary age kids with art making is just impossible to beat. So having kids excited every day about things that we're creating and making is just kind of a natural connection to what I like to do with my own art making.
And you are many students' first experience of actually making their own art. Do you have particular plans for your students this year?
We have a really well-established curriculum for art education with state standards that we address. I was on the team that helped write and develop that for our district. It's all planned out. And very young ages, of course, there's a lot of exposure to just different materials and processes and techniques. So many kids, by the time they're in fourth grade, identify themselves as an artist or not. And that's really connected a lot to their ability to draw things that look realistic. So by fourth grade, there's that kid that's the artist in the room, if they're able to draw things. So part of like what I really am passionate about is helping kids realize that's just one tiny little sliver of what art making is. And there's so many different materials and processes and just finding something that they enjoy and like to work with and like to create with. You know, my goal is not to make every student a famous artist with their work in a museum. My goal as an art teacher is to help students realize that creative expression is just a part of who we are as humans and people. And you can appreciate what other people create and find joy and fulfillment in creating things yourself.
Are there some classroom exercises that have been especially successful in engaging your students?
I'm a firm believer in sketchbooks. And as adult artists, like sketchbooks, of course, you know, are an important part. And when I first started teaching, I remember starting sketchbooks with fourth and fifth grade students. And then realizing, oh, my second and third graders could benefit from this too. And for the last 20 years, just kindergarten through fifth grade, like, sketchbooks are where we experiment with ideas and try things out in a real safe spot where it doesn't feel like we're being judged. We can also develop skills, in a sketchbook. And it feels like this is kind of our own personal space to just create things without fear of other people judging or like feeling like it has to be hung on the refrigerator when it's finished. I think they're a real important part of students feeling kind of growing and their identity as an art maker.
Do you see students using their sketchbooks on their own time at home as well?
Oh, definitely. In my classroom, I have what I call a student gallery, which is the largest billboard in the classroom. And it's just a blank billboard where they can display anything that they've made at home. And I just have a continuous stack of artwork that kids make at home and bring in. And we just kind of cycle it through the student gallery, and it hangs up at least a week or two until they're ready to take it home. Definitely, when students feel like they can explore materials here, they want to do more of it at home too. And it's one of the bits of advice I give parents a lot when they're like, my child's interested in art. How do I encourage it? And just provide materials so they can, and just let them play and experiment and feel like it's safe to just make mistakes and try.
That's a wonderful way to flip the usual experience, which is kids bringing art home and it goes on the refrigerator. So that really makes parents a part of their child's exploration of making art.
I try to balance that. Of course, we make beautiful things to take home and display also. And all of the art teachers in Champaign and Urbana are really great about exhibiting students' artwork in the community. So we do an art exhibition every spring at the Marketplace Mall. There's just lots of opportunities in our town for kids to exhibit and share their work.
Yeah, the Champaign Library has a particular program that I've enjoyed a lot.
Participate in that routinely.
You said that you worked on developing the curriculum for teaching art in Champaign. What went into that, and what form does it take?
10 or 12 years ago, the state of Illinois adopted n new standards for art education in Illinois. And these were a pretty dramatic shift from what we did have previously. And so currently, it's set up about four domains or kind of large, big ideas in art. And it's about creating, responding, presenting, and connecting are kind of the four big ideas. So our curriculum is really built around those ideas kind of being prevalent in all the art experiences that we provide. So students, of course, get a lot of time to spend creating art, but they're also looking at like how to respond to art that other people have made, looking at how to connect the meaning of art, their own artwork, and the art of other people. And then also learning about presenting art, because that's a different skill set of like, now you've made something, what do you do with it? Matting and tagging and framing and exhibiting and critiquing in a productive way is all part of what happens. And that's so very different than most people's elementary art experiences.
So you actually work with children to help them learn how to critique their friends' work. Wow, that is a particular skill that most people are not very good
Yeah, cope. We start in kindergarten.
at.
We start in kindergarten,
Yeah.
and it's all in how it's set up. So I have what I call the 6 foot test. And what it is you pick a friend that you trust and you hang up your artwork on a tack board and step back about 6 feet. And then you and your friend just have a talk about what you like best and how you can make it better. It's a very just casual, I wouldn't call it a critique, but it's what it is. The idea is when we usually create art about a foot away with our face so close, but if you back up about 6 feet, you get the perspective of a viewer instead. And so when students engage in that, they come up with ideas. And it's this idea of like reflecting on your own work and coming up with ideas on how to improve it, and then taking those steps. I tell my students that, like, when I'm creating art, I have a group of friends that I'll text pictures to, and like, what do you think about this? When you have other creative people that you trust and respect, getting feedback from them is useful.
Your show Regeneration, I was particularly drawn to the display of origami that came out of a collaboration between your Carrie Busey students and then older adults in an OLLI class. You actually received a grant to run a collaborative project. How did that work?
So my own art making, I focus a lot with origami and paper folding. Students of elementary age particularly just really enjoy that, the idea of manipulating and folding paper. I've been teaching it my entire career, and it's something that kids really latch onto and love. So I have an after-school origami club for fourth and fifth graders that will meet once a week. And I got the idea of wanting the students to be in kind of a teaching leadership role with sharing their knowledge and expertise about this art form with other people. So I contacted the director of OLLI, which is the University of Illinois kind of organization for seniors, kind of ongoing learning, lifelong learning. We decided to partner up for this workshop, and my students came prepared to share what they know. And we had a book that had diagrams of different things to fold at different levels of difficulty. And they just partnered up with another adult who was a total stranger at the Champaign Public Library. And then they guided these adults through creating these objects. And when they were finished, we took the finished origami pieces that they made, and I matted and framed them so they really looked worthy of something to display. So, and that was included in my exhibition. A lot of times we think of origami as like almost like a playground craft, you know, like everyone remembers in school making the little fortune tellers that you operate. So taking something that's this little folded object and then elevating it to something that's more fine art is something I really enjoy doing. So this was just a chance for students to share what they know. And the response I got was fantastic from the parents of the students. And of course, the members of OLLI too really enjoyed that time. With each diagram, I also had little prompts for discussions. So one of the models they were folding was a small origami house, you know, and there was a little prompt on there about tell me about your favorite place you've ever lived. And so people had things to talk about while they were doing this together. And it's really great discussions and connection came about through that.
That's quite wonderful. Did you learn things from watching the adults and the children interact?
I loved seeing the children really push the boundaries about how complicated of things they can teach. So, the origami crane is like the most traditional, famous model that people will fold. And it's not that easy. Like, there's quite a few steps and it's pretty involved. So, in the booklet that I had made, it's like the last thing in the most tiered level of difficulty. And of course, I had some students who were so confident they jumped in and started teaching that first. And then completely went off script and had an 85-year-old partner making really complex origami models. And they succeeded because part of what really works well is with origami and just lots of art making is if you're partnered with someone who's just one-on-one sitting beside you and helping you each step of the way, you're much more likely to be successful. I mean, we're like that in all aspects of life, right? If we had someone right beside us, just encouraging and guiding and helping every step through a process. This was just set up so that these were 10-year-olds doing it.
Your show, Regeneration, focuses on two distinctly different mediums, folded paper and wood sculptures. How has your work in each of these forms developed over time, and do they inform each other?
The art teachers in Champaign have been exhibiting our own personal artwork for about 15 or 20 years now. It's an annual show we do called Those Who Teach Can. When we first had the idea to do this show, we all love art. We're all artists ourselves, but just in the process of working as a teacher, we have very little time to create our own artwork. By kind of giving ourselves a deadline of this annual show, you know, a deadline helps. It helps us focus on our own personal identities as artists. And we've been doing that for a long time. And some of the earliest things that I created were assemblage sculptures. So sculptures made of found objects, kind of reassembled. And I made those for many years and exhibited some in locally. But I really got into origami about 10 years ago as an art making practice. And then even more so about 5 years ago, where my current work that I'm making is really, most of it has been happening in the last 5 years. And I think what is similar about both materials is the aspect that I enjoy about them is the transformative nature. For origami, you're using a single square piece of paper. So these kind of self-imposed rules that you have, like a single square that you don't cut, you don't glue. It's just the only tools are your hands, and you're just folding it and transforming it into something else. We sometimes think about art as additive, like where you add things together to create it, or subtractive, like carving away a block of stone. But origami is a transformative art form. It's changing and manipulating one thing into something else. And that's a lot how I think about the wood sculpture that I've been making too. I'm using discarded and found pieces of wood and then reassembling into something else. And by painting them a monochromatic or single color, it really kind of erases a little bit of their old identity and turns them into something new. So when you're looking at one of these sculptures, you might recognize, oh, that's the arm of a chair, or that's a piece of some molding, but it's also something different now. So that's a theme that I think is prevalent in my work.
You say that each piece you make is an expression of persistence, of reshaping what already exists into something new and unexpected. So, how has your art been part of your life, really, in that way?
I think that art can be kind of cathartic as a way to work through challenges that you're experiencing yourself. And certainly some of the early paper folding origami work that I made was, this was in the middle of a global pandemic also. So the almost meditative process of repeatedly folding and transforming paper was a process that I was engaging with. But also, I've always felt that when I'm making art, I'm thinking about the meaning. Why am I doing what I'm making? What is this about? And it's not always important to me that a viewer understands all of that. So another person looking at this artwork might not get all of the same thoughts that were going through my mind while I was creating it. And I think that's kind of pretty typical with most art that's more abstract. It's not a very clear, exact representation of a story. I think of myself as an artist, ongoing and evolving and changing. And what I choose to explore and create is certainly connected to what I'm thinking and what I'm feeling over time and how that changes too.
Do you have ways of challenging yourself to develop and experiment with different forms of art?
Yes, definitely. I think their more recent exploration into sculpture. I'm revisiting a sculptural process that I have done in the past. In the past, I was not painting the pieces. So kind of working with painted pieces has really been a new approach for me in the last 2 years. But I always tell people, one thing I really enjoy about teaching elementary art is the variety of materials that I work with. So I might be painting one day with fifth graders, and the next day working with clay with kindergartners, and then the next day printmaking. And all these different materials are a part of my daily work. Early on, I really had a hard time focusing in on, like, what do I want my own art to be? Like, I kind of love it all, you know? I love playing with all these different things. To find my own, like, artistic voice, it really does help to focus in on a certain material and develop some mastery in that material. So I always think like an added challenge is just broadening that. So I might work with folded paper, and then I might work with paper that I've painted myself, or with found paper, or, switching up the materials that I start with dramatically changes the outcome of what I create.
A phrase you've used about your art is the beauty of uncertainty and what may happen in the process of working with these materials. Is there a way you can expand on that thought?
It's best to show this visually, but I'll explain the best I can. So imagine a piece of paper with an image on it. When you fold that image in half, you're concealing part of it and revealing part. And when you fold it again and fold it again, different parts are getting concealed and revealed in that process. Just kind of exploring with the material, unexpected results will happen. And over time, I've gotten where I can predict it a little better. So I know, like, oh, whatever the way the paint sits in the corner of the paper, or the image that's in the corner, if I fold it this way, that'll be revealed or hidden. But inevitably, as I'm folding and manipulating the paper, there's unexpected surprises that happen. And it's kind of the same with working with wood pieces too. Like, I can imagine in my head what it will look like if I combine a piece of door molding and this drawer, and I combine them in this way. I can kind of imagine, but I don't know exactly until I put them together and rotate them and, reposition them. So there's a lot of kind of intuitive, like, decision making that's happening in the moment as I'm creating. And sometimes it's like, oh, wow, I love how this turned out. And other times, like, it's not working. And I tell that to my students a lot too. You have to become comfortable with just taking creative risks of trying something and being okay for it to fail. And that can be really hard. Some students, especially ones that are very good at drawing, will be hesitant to mess up and fail, especially with other people, when other people can see. So a lot of what I do as a teacher is try to create this environment where this is a safe place to take creative risks, to try things out, to see what happens. And you might have 20 prints that come out terrible, but when you get one that's great, it's like, wow, that's real. Like that's what real artists experience. And what we see hanging in the museum is not the 20 failures. So
Yes, that's good to remind people. And you've also said that your pieces evolve from a deep respect for materials. How have you learned about the nature of wood and paper as you've done so many different things with them?
they're just so common. We have bins full of recycled scrap paper in our offices and classrooms. And, most of the wood I work with, I find on the curb as being discarded. They're just such common materials. If you focus in on like what aspects of this are interesting or beautiful and highlight that and focus attention on it, that's something I love to do creatively, is to take something that's just so common and basic and to present it in its best way. For a while, I was folding a lot of old maps from National Geographic magazines. And just the quality of those maps, like they would take folds and creases so well, and they'd hold forms that I would make. So it was really fun to work with. And I kind of realized there's kind of a window of time where maps from like the 60s, 70s, and 80s, the quality of them was really different than like newer maps included in that magazine. So just finding things like that. The Idea Store in Lincoln Square Mall is a wonderful resource for just finding all kinds of great materials to play and experiment with. And the same with wood, different types of wood will take paint differently and grain will show. And I do a lot of woodworking myself. So I have all the tools to sand and smooth and cut things just right. But also, I really love finding wood in a natural state of like, here's this table leg that's been gnawed on by a dog is like,
I have a few of those.
I don't want to sand that smooth. The character of what this object has been through already becomes part of my reinterpretation of it as artwork.
A question I ask in my interviews with artists, do you have a personal daily practice that helps you center on your creative work or explore it or simply honor it as you know you're going to be entering a busy day?
Of course, as a teacher, my schedule is considerably different in the summer. So I have a lot more time to create in the summer. But I was quite intentional when I started working with origami that it was something that I could incorporate into just my daily practice while still teaching. I will often take small squares of paper that are just 4 or 5 inches and will have them in my pocket. What I like to do is kind of fold those into small tiles. And then a lot of the work that I create is combining those tiles that I make into larger compositions. There might be a work of art that I create that's made out of 9 of these small folded tiles together, or I have some that are over 100 tiles. But what's great is that I can kind of take those with me. So even on like traveling on vacation, sitting on a subway, I can just pull out some squares of paper and fold some little tiles. And a lot of it is just experimenting and coming up with a design that I like. And then once I have it, then repeating lots of those or creating a composition with many of those pieces together. The students will often see, like when I'm at school with breakfast supervision duty, where I'm going around and opening milk cartons, when there's no one needing help, I'll just pull out some paper and just fold a little square, experiment a little. And quite often I will just pass those on to kids. And if it's something I really like, it goes into my pocket to explore more later. So it really can become part of just my daily practice as a teacher and as an artist. If I were confined to, I only create when I'm sitting in my studio and I have all my objects sitting in front of me, I would not produce near as much work and generate as many ideas. A lot of times, the ideas for what I want to make don't come to me when I'm sitting in my studio. I used to do a lot more traditional origami, which focuses a lot on, small animals and things like that. And I enjoy that. And that's a lot of what I teach my students. And those models, those diagrams, really were developed traditionally in Japan. The origami that I use in my own art making is not so much influenced from traditional Japanese origami, though. There was an educational former researcher in Germany in the 1800s named Frederick Froebel. He's actually the person who originated the idea of kindergarten. He set out an approach that really focused on early development of students, just exploration of materials for cognitive development. He called them gifts, and it might be just a box of wooden blocks or some string and yarn, but just how kids can interact with those objects to just develop their brain. And one of those gifts was a folded paper base. So it's just a little square of paper, and I have some images of these diagrams from this time of just folding this little base tile, but then it can be modified into endless variations. So part of what would happen in these early German kindergartens, students would take these paper tiles and make this base and then make all these variations with it. When I first discovered this, I loved this concept of using this kind of little folded base and then changing it into things. And so I kind of appropriated that into my art practice. And so a lot of the work that you see that I have with tiles assembled together are kind of coming from a foundation in that, which is, I think, an interesting connection too. It was unintentional, but the fact that it's coming from a early childhood education reformer, I think, is an interesting connection.
What advice can you offer to people who want to find a way to develop their creative lives, whether they're young or older, and if not for a career, then for a personal art that helps them just enter into and learn about the experiences of their lives?
The biggest struggle here is inhibition of just, you just have to try it. You just have to do it. So often adults will tell me, oh, I wish I could do that. I'm like, well, you can. Like, we have access to materials in our town or online. Materials are easy to come by. But I think the fear of being judged by other people just stops so many adults in their tracks from trying to create something. The more you create art and share it with people around you, the more you want to create art. People engage in so many creative acts, being cooking an incredible meal, or my mom was an amazing gardener and had this beautiful yard, and she wouldn't call herself an artist, but absolutely, she would create a vision in her mind and would create this space. It's not a painting in a museum, but it was a way for her to express herself. To exist in the world as something other than just a consumer. To create and make something is an experience that I think a lot of people are just, they're missing out on something so wonderful if they would just try.
John, thank you so much. This has been a wonderful conversation and inspiring. I think that people listening to what you do and how you think about it will really lead them to engage more with their children, with themselves, and we are very lucky to have you in our community.
Well, thank you, Cope.
Catch the Beat is brought to you in part by the listeners of WEFT and Jane Addams Bookshop in downtown Champaign. For more than 40 years, Jane Addams Bookshop has been a destination for readers and book lovers of all ages. Jane Addams Bookshop at 208 North Neal in downtown Champaign, online at janeaddamsbooks.com. You're listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, streaming on weft.org. All episodes of Catch the Beat are archived on the WEFT website at weft.org under Public Affairs. You can also listen to live stream and archive shows on the WEFT app, available on your favorite app store. With thanks to Creative Commons for intro and outro music by Kevin MacLeod, see you next time.